Well, good morning to you all. Thank you for having me with you today to speak. It's a real privilege to come and speak with you. My name's Ali. I'm 27. I live in Bedford, but I grew up in Yorkshire, and I work for the King's Arms Project. For those of you that don't know what that is, we run a night shelter, a hostel, a floating support service, and an outreach meal, among other things, to work with the homeless and disadvantaged and rough sleepers here in Bedford. We work with roughly 85 people at one time, or about 300 people in a year, and we look to be helping them both practically through food, a bed, a place to stay, a home to live in, but also to be helping them emotionally and spiritually through building family and community and just telling them about the God who loves them. I think some people can think that ministry with the poor is quite a straightforward, feel-good kind of ministry. Well, I came to King's Arms Project when I was only 23. I was just a year out of university and I had no experience of working with the homeless. One of my jobs was to go into the night shelter to give housing advice, to take on some individuals as clients and just to provide some support for people. Now, around that time, there was a young guy staying at the shelter called Mark. He was Irish, he was about a year older than me, and he was managing a day's work here and there on a construction site. He was being paid cash in hand and he was really desperate to get his own place and get off the street. However, he was also drinking, using drugs and had real problems with his temper. He had problems with any figures of authority and he didn't really want to do much to help his own situation. To be honest, anything anyone suggested, he wanted them to do it for him. I remember one time I went in and I'd get a few metres in from the door and he would start ambushing me with questions. Why hadn't I got him a flat yet? Why hadn't anything changed? Why hadn't I brought him this or that? Someone had told me some things about his family life, so I knew that he'd had a hard upbringing, but I didn't really know what to do with him. Anytime I suggested something to him or maybe suggested something he could do to take action, he would just belittle it and complain that I wasn't helping him in any way. I would work really hard for him, but nothing I did seemed to be good enough. I remember one evening, I'd had a particularly long day at work. I'd come out in the cold and the rain. I'd come to the night shelter and I'd been working there for about 2 hours, helping people to find housing advice, supporting them, listening to them. It was about 10 p.m. and I was about to go back out into the cold and rain to go home. I was absolutely desperate to leave. And I'd found out that the day before, Mark had been telling people that he didn't like me and he thought I couldn't do my job and that I hadn't done anything to help him. So this had been going around the night shelter. I was just heading out the door, and he came and stood in front of me. He stood in front of me eye to eye. I could smell the alcohol on his breath, could see that his pupils were dilated from everything that he'd been taking. He stood between me and the door, and he told me I had to give him a lift to the police station because he had to sign in. I had to take him now. Honestly, I didn't know what to say. I was just really cross. I was desperate to get home. I just wanted to tell him to take a hike. I didn't want to spend any time with him. I simply thought, how dare he ask me after everything I've done? How dare he ask me to do this when he's been saying this about me? The last thing I wanted to do, to be honest, was to help him out. I opened my mouth and then I realized I was about to lie to him. I was going to tell him that I had to be somewhere else and I didn't have time to take him. And then I was going to go home, open a bottle of wine, and put my feet up. I was neither willing to help him, nor to be truthful about why not. To be honest, inside I was thinking, why can't I just quit this job and do something easier? When I got the job, I think I imagined myself roaming around, helping the needy, blessing the poor folks with a small halo glowing above my head gently, maybe wearing some kind of superhero cloak or something. And here I was confronted with the reality of this man. Broken, unpredictable, deceitful, unlovely, ungrateful. And the reality of myself, weak, impatient, insecure, ultimately just selfish. You can see from this story that I was not particularly well equipped to deal with this. My own compassion and resources were running out pretty fast. So before you think that working with the poor is for the specially gifted or for those who are called in some way, think again. I believe that as Christians, we're released by God's grace to become more like Jesus. And that as Christians, we're to have hearts that care for the things that God is concerned with. So I thought what we'd do this morning is look a bit at how God feels about the poor, and then a little about what that means for each of us on a day-to-day basis. So, if you'll bear with me, I want to take a little flip through the Old Testament and see what God says about the poor, and then to look at one verse in particular. So in Deuteronomy 15, God talks about opening your hand to the poor. He says, "Do not harden your heart or shut your hand to the poor. Do not give to them grudgingly, but know that the Lord your God will reward you." Later in many of the Proverbs, they give reference to the poor. In fact, scattered throughout the Proverbs are references to giving to the poor. And there's one that stands out particularly for me, which is Proverbs 14, in verse 31, it says, "He who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honours God." You know, God doesn't make important people and less important people. The poor are our equals. God has equal concern for them. As we show contempt for the poor, we're actually showing contempt for our Maker God, the one that we heard about a moment ago, who made the heavens and the earth. He made each of these people. And if we oppress them or show contempt for them, we're actually showing contempt for God. But he promises that if we're kind to the needy, we're honouring him. Then later in Leviticus, in the law, it states that as you, obviously, there are modern day applications for this, but as you harvest your field, you should leave round the edges, harvest for the poor. He says that don't gather all the grapes from your vineyard, because the grapes that are left are for the poor. The implication obviously being that God has stated in the law that he wants us to be giving to the needy. In fact, it comes right in there above, "Do not steal and do not lie," which is an interesting placing for it. It really quickly becomes clear as I look through the Old Testament just how high a value God places on the poor. But I think when I speak with groups or friends about the homeless, one thing often comes up. They say that the poor that God is talking about in these verses are very different to the poor that we see in our country. I think often they see that people's circumstances is a direct result of their own choices or their ongoing actions. They ask me whether I really think we should be helping people who aren't willing to help themselves. You know, I understand where that question comes from. Let me give you an example. I worked with a guy called Steve. As I got to know him, I found out how he came to be homeless. See, Steve was not only a drug addict and a drinker, but he had smuggled drugs across several continents, messing up the lives of hundreds of people. He was a compulsive liar, and he liked to fight. He had messed up relationships with everybody in his life, from his mother to his own child. When I met him, he was fresh out of prison, and the only people that he knew in the world were either dealers or users. Thing is, as I got to know Steve and others like him, something started to dawn on me. I would think about the way that I can fall into the same argument with the same people time and time again. And I realized that's a pattern of destructive behavior in my life. Or I'd think about things that I've done that are so hard to admit to even one other person. And I realized that's the reality of living with sin and with shame. Or I'd look at addictions, and then I'd realize how often I turn to something other than God for comfort or to push my problems to the back of my mind. I know there are different degrees of these things, but can you see what I'm getting at? As I sat and listened to Steve, I was reminded that although the outcome for him was a lot more dramatic, the roots of those things were found in me as well. I had a fantastic upbringing, but I still find those things harboring in me. Thankfully, God doesn't see just that. Steve had done some terrible things, and to be honest, he had made some really stupid choices. But at the end of the day, God has compassion on the lost. Jesus tells us that our God, he goes charging out in pursuit of that one lost sheep. I realized that where I was looking on Steve with judgment, God was looking on him with mercy and a desire to transform this messed up guy into the person that he created him to be. And you know, Steve, this hopeless case, well, he's now back in relationship with his family. He is clean from drugs. He's been working full-time for 18 months. And I had a phone call from him not so long ago to say that he's engaged to his girlfriend and they plan to be married. He also has an openness to God that he never had before. You see, God knows that the poor can be unlovely. He knows they don't always deserve our help. But God's plan has never been to save those who deserve it. His plan is to come for those who don't deserve it, and therefore display his glory all the more as his power is shown through their transformation. You know, if we want to know whether God thinks people can change, we need look no further than Isaiah 61. Just like to read you a bit. If you have got a pew Bible or a Bible of your own, just turn to Isaiah 61. It reads, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and the opening of prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, to comfort all who mourn, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes, an oil of gladness instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a faint spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Instead of their shame, there shall be a double portion, and instead of dishonor, they will rejoice in their lot. They shall have everlasting joy. God's not just looking to give the poor and the broken just about enough to get by. He can provide wholeness, healing, restoration. The question is, can we really expect that? Do we expect that of God for people that we see in our society? Well, let me go back to Mark, the guy who was confronting me in the night shelter. This guy, well, not long after the encounter I described to you, he had started asking questions about God. And to be honest, my heart was a little cynical about it, I have to be real. But around that time, his best friend died. He died of an OD, and many of us started to pray for Mark that he would just know God in the situation. Miraculously, he pressed in and started to get to know God and begin a relationship with him. It's now 2.5 years later, and I swear you wouldn't know he is the same guy. I was talking to him at church last week, and I realized just how amazing that transformation has been. I was standing at the back of church with him, and he came up and greeted me warmly. We stood there having a joke about something and had a chat about work. He's working as a carpenter, having done a training apprenticeship. He's been in a steady relationship with a woman in our church for about 2 years, and they've just got engaged. They're leading one of our small groups together. As we were standing there talking, I realized suddenly he's actually one of the most genuine and warm men that I know. As we said goodbye, he gave me a pat on the shoulder and told me that he started to pray about when he should come and work with the project and minister to the poor. So what does this mean for us? Well, in Luke 4, it explains that that passage from Isaiah 61 is actually a prophecy about Jesus that he came to fulfill. And as his followers, the New Testament urges us to become disciples of Jesus and promises that we will do even greater things. So I guess we need to be responding the way that Jesus responded. You know, there are too many examples for me to read them all out from the Gospels of how Jesus responded to the poor. But bottom line, he sought out the lowest of the low. He ate meals with them, he stopped on the street for them, he had compassion on them, he healed them and he loved them. He saw that they were precious and he demonstrated their value to them. So this is our mandate. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on us to preach good news to the poor, to bind up the brokenhearted, to see the captives set free, to see the messed up, broken people in our society become oaks of righteousness that display God's splendor. What I would love to do is give you a perfect model for how we can do that. The thing is, what I've learned in working for the project is that every person who is homeless or poor has come to be that way in a completely different set of circumstances. Let me give you some examples. I know a man who was educated in a public school here in Bedford, a very good school. He had a degree in London. He worked for Saatchi & Saatchi, the advertising firm, during the boom period. So he was raking in the money. He lived in a flat on the river in Richmond. He is an incredibly intelligent, witty, lovable guy. But through bereavement of a child, intense pressure in the workplace, a culture of drowning your sorrows, and chronic depression, he lost everything. When I met him, I think I was about 25, he was about 45, and I was helping him. He was in the night shelter, simply unable to comprehend how things could have changed so much for him. Or another example, I know a girl who had mental health problems and then, on the other hand, learning disabilities. She left care at 16 and they put her into a flat to manage on her own. She was completely unable to understand the responsibility or what to do with it. She ended up letting anybody come and use the flat, and it got used as a drug den by loads of people on the street. Eventually, she fled the flat with huge debts. At that time, she only had a mental age of about 12. Or I know a couple who have been together for 10 years. While being street homeless, they've been together all that time. Each of them has their own history. As children, both were abused either physically or sexually. Both have known rejection, broken homes, and violence. They are inseparable, but because of their brokenness, they take all of their problems out on each other, and they have this volatile and dangerous relationship. So how can we, as everyday people, possibly hope to contend with those kind of problems? Well, it is something that we are trying to work out daily through the King's Arms Project, whether it's practical support, finding ways to restore dignity, rebuild trust, whether it's support sessions or simply by modelling unconditional love to people, providing a family. We're looking for ways to restore them. But I think for us as individuals, there is a call to us as well. So I've just got a few thoughts about things that I find really helpful to keep in mind. So the first thing is to pray for opportunity. It is easy not to see people in our society, but they are there. You know, the poor are not just the homeless. They're single parent families, the elderly and housebound, asylum seekers, those trapped by depression or disability. We just need to be asking God to reveal to us who can help, pray for opportunities, and then seize them when they come up. Secondly, it's really good to know it is not our responsibility to fix everything. God just calls us to love people. If we look at the scale of the problem, it's really easy to become overwhelmed and then just get paralysed and do nothing because we feel inadequate. You know, when I started working for the project, I felt so inadequate. Now, all these years later, I feel so inadequate. It doesn't change. We are inadequate, but that's okay. All we need to do is change that to a fuller understanding of our dependency on God. Keep it simple. Just love people. Be real. We don't have the answers, but ask God to show you how precious they are and then to demonstrate that to them. Finally, the other thing we can always do is pray for people. Jesus healed the sick. Now, if we're his disciples and we are called to do even greater things, that means a lot for us. So recently, we've really been trying to take hold of those passages. We've been praying for the sick more and more. Last week, a man was staying in the night shelter. He had a chronic knee complaint that he'd had for years. It was really tough for him, not only being on the street all day, but even walking from place to place to get help and appointments. So our manager at the night shelter, she prayed for him. And instantly, the pain went. He returned that night and he said he was completely healed. He'd been playing football all day and he was complaining about blisters on his feet from running around so much. His knees are still healed. At our outreach meal just before Christmas, I prayed for a guy with severe chest problems. He'd had a complaint for about a month. He was sleeping in a squat and there was no heating. He could hardly breathe when he made it to the meal. He'd not been able to sleep for months. He'd been taken into hospital twice. So I prayed for him with a few others at that meeting. Didn't see much change at the time. Prayed for him again. The next week I saw him, he was absolutely amazed. From that point, over the next 2 days, it had cleared up completely. The weather hadn't improved or anything. The pain had just gone away and the difficulty had left him. He's not had a chest complaint since. You know, ministering to the poor is not about what we can do. It's about what God can do and what he wants to do through us. Believe me, I run out of compassion and resources pretty quickly. I know I do all the time. But through God, it is a really different story. For me, it has been one of the biggest pleasures of my life to get to know the homeless and disadvantaged men and women in here in Bedford, and then to see the glory of God displayed through the changes in them. I don't know. Maybe you're thinking, well, that's fine for those who are in full-time ministry in that way, or for Jesus, who was God. We've got millions of other things to worry about in day-to-day life. Well, just to turn to Galatians 2, Paul writes in his letter, "They asked us to remember the poor. It was the very thing I was eager to do." Now, Paul is a guy who preached to crowds of Gentiles and saw them immediately turn to God. He spread the gospel throughout the land, planted churches, raised up leaders. He saw God miraculously heal people. He raised a guy from the dead. He had seen a jailer converted and baptized when he was meant to be guarding his cell. And yet Paul, this guy having this amazing life, says he is eager to remember the poor. He didn't have to. He didn't say he ought to or felt he was meant to. He said he was eager. Why is that? I believe it's because he was a man after God's own heart. He knew God intimately and was passionate to get his heart in line with God's. He didn't do it to earn God's favour, but out of love and gratitude for the fact that he had God's favour for free. So there's no point us getting into this thinking it'll be an easy ride, or, you know, that we'll earn brownie points with God. But we can know that as we do these things, we are getting our hearts in line with God's heart. So in summary, God is passionate about the poor. They have incredibly high value to him, and he has all the resources we need to love them and to work with them. So let me just leave you with an encouragement. Dig into the scriptures and the gospels. Believe God for the way that Jesus worked with the poor and needy, that he can do the same through us. Secondly, don't let any feeling of inadequacy, anything to do with your background, your age, anything like that, don't let that overwhelm you. You might not be able to solve everything for someone. But on the other hand, you might be the only person that ever stops and tells them how precious they are to God. And finally, just be proactive. Let's pray for opportunities and go after them. Believe God for his promises. He wants to transform the lives of the poor, and he loves to do it through us. Amen.